JB Knowledge Podcast Network.
On episode 91 of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, talking about InsurTech with Garrett Droege from IMA Financial Group.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.
Welcome to the InsurTech Geek Podcast. I'm your host, James Benham. As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your friends. Before we get started with our interview, don't forget you can subscribe to the InsurTech Geek Podcast by texting Geek Out to 66866. Make sure you never miss an episode. Here I am today with our special guest, as I mentioned before, Garrett Droege from IMA Financial Group. We're going to be talking about InsurTech. Garrett, thanks for joining us on the InsurTech Geek Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So, Garrett, we're going to start out talking about you before we jump in talking about technology. I am like a lifelong, almost lifelong, I'm 43. I've been writing code since I was about 11. So I'm a pretty hardcore nerd, like to code, like to talk about code, like to build software and technology. But more than that, surprisingly, I'm a people person. I actually like talking about people. So tell me about yourself. First off, where are you joining us from today?
So I am just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. Also 43, nice. Also software developers. So we've got a lot in common.
Nice. Which, you know, it's fun when you meet someone around the same age, because all of the generational references for technology, like I can say things, Garrett, that you're going to understand.
Yes.
That most people won't. I can say that my first 8 programming languages, among them was GW Basic, Fortran, Assembly, Pascal, Turbo Pascal. I loved Pascal.
I love Pascal too. That was my first. Yeah. So I was late to the game. You were much earlier than I was.
GW Basic was the jam. It was the jam, Garrett. It was messy and sloppy, and there were no procedure calls. There were just these things called go-to statements. You had to jump around, and you made this big pile of code called spaghetti code. My first big application I built was in Pascal. And that's actually kind of how I got into technology, Garrett. Do you remember what your first application was? I wrote a word processor that had a little encryption thing where it would encrypt your message.
Huh.
And I made it emulate, kind of look like MS-DOS's edit program, the MS-DOS edit program.
Yeah.
I was on Linux and FreeBSD back then as well, and I used VI. I was one of those weirdos that used VI for my text editor. Do you remember what your first applications were that you got to code?
I have no idea. I took computer science in high school.
Yeah.
It was an elective that I thought sounded easy. And yeah, and it was like, here's not Pascal and here's, and it, no. But I really enjoyed it. And later on, I got into web development. So, HTML and that, like, that language made more sense to me.
Yeah.
Pascal was like, I really don't understand what we're doing and why it takes 5 hours to make a tiny little thing happen. So
yeah, well, that's back before you had any like intrinsic functions. Like there were intrinsic functions, but not a lot. And so there wasn't a lot. You had to hand code. I remember I had to hand code the drop down menu in Pascal.
Yeah,
you know, file, edit, copy, like all that. I had to hand code that.
Right, and if you get one thing wrong,
it's all over.
You got to it's all over. You got to redo the entire thing. It's in the garbage.
It's all over. Yeah. So I'm going to throw some more stuff out for you, because we're just going to go do a time warp here. Gopher sites. Did you ever get to play with Gopher before HTML?
No.
So Gopher was like 93, 94, and it was on the way out as HTML and HTTP were on the way in. But it was like, you know, you had this thing between FTP and the web called Gopher, and it was pretty cool, but it was a predecessor to what really changed the planet. And that was HTML and HTTP and markup languages. And I mean, it was a totally brave new world. You know, we all coded static HTML first, then we started putting code behind them, and then the whole planet changed, right?
Yeah. And now, I should say I'm very out of date. I no longer code. and when I actually look at software today, and I'm like, you know, all of the stuff that would take us weeks to code is now baked in.
An hour.
It's just a click of a button and shortcut insert. Yeah. And so, no clue what's happening in the world of software today.
Well,
directly. Yeah.
Yeah, Garrett, I'm in the same boat. So of my 270 staff, 220 or so are engineers. And so they do the coding. I don't do it anymore. But I'll say that you and I had to learn this thing called bubble sort. And we had to learn like sort algorithms and how to store data in arrays. And now they're like, oh yeah, I just tell the code to put the data over there. And then I tell it to bring it back. And I'm like, that used to be like 2 weeks of work.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's a different world. So but interestingly, you ended up getting a theater degree,
yeah,
which I think is super cool. I'm a hardcore musical theater Broadway nerd.
Love it.
Did you want to be a performer?
Yeah, so I was. I was a theater major. I got a couple of jobs. So in the coast of North Carolina, the largest studio east of Hollywood is in Wilmington, North Carolina. Several teen drama shows were filmed there while I was in college. So
Dawson's Creek.
Like Dawson's Creek. Yeah. One Tree Hill.
Yes.
and so we made our rounds on those. My wife and I moved out to LA, chased a couple jobs, hence my re-entry into the world of software development. I started my own web development company while we were out there between acting jobs. And that took on a really nice life of its own. Just about the time we were hitting into the black and successful, we decided we wanted to leave LA, move back east, start a family. And so I sold the company, thought I might do another startup. My wife got pregnant immediately, and I took a very quick job into insurance. I thought I'd be here for 1 to 3 months before I figured out what I was going to do. And, you know, 17 years later, here we are.
And dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, right.
Sucked into the vortex of insurance.
There it is.
Yeah, baby.
There it is.
It does that. You know, it did that to me, and I'm cool with it. I'm like, I like this. It's
insane.
Yeah. It's really important problems. When businesses can't get insurance, they're in a lot of trouble. You know, economic activity grinds to a halt. Bad things happen. So it's an important industry.
Yeah.
Your favorite acting gig, what was it?
My favorite acting gig.
Or top three. You don't have to pick one.
Okay. Well, I was in a lottery commercial that ran nonstop, you know, specifically at my gym, where I worked out for like 2 years. And so I would be working out and I'd see people register, like the guy on the screen looks like the guy on the elliptical. And so it was kind of half fun, half annoying, because it got to be like, yeah, that's me. Yeah. So I'm an expert at little bit parts, one liners that need to be said. Playing lab technicians seems to be a forte of mine. Nothing nice. Really, really hard hitting drama.
Were you ever in Dawson's Creek?
Oh, yeah. I was part of Dawson's film crew back in the last season where Dawson became a filmmaker. I was on his film crew. My wife was on Dawson's. She played a store owner that Pacey had a little deal with. We were both on One Tree Hill. Yeah, great memories of that. And I would say I use my degree probably more than anybody that I know. You know, theater skills are important skills, communication, presentation, you know, improvisation, all very, very necessary in my role at least.
Yeah. My daughter's a 15-year-old hardcore musical theater nerd. Just spent the summer at Interlochen.
Awesome.
It was amazing. I had to see their final performances last Friday and to watch a bunch of 15-year-olds from all over the country. And Interlochen does great things with them, right? I mean, it's a pretty
intense,
pretty,
yeah,
pretty cool school. They produced some of the best Broadway I have seen. I was like, holy crap, you're 15.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Dawson's Creek, my favorite was Pacey. So just wanted to say that.
Okay.
He was my favorite. So I just gotta lay it out there. I don't
pick favorites. Okay. I love them all.
I happen to be a fan. So all right. So let's jump in. You somehow stumbled into InsurTech. And insurance in general. You've been in that space since 2007. So it has been a pretty neat ride for you, you know, 15 years now in insurance. Right now, let's kind of go to, because you just recently took over last year as the Director of Innovation and Strategy at IMA Financial Group. What does IMA Financial Group do and what do you do for them?
So IMA Financial is the third largest independent insurance broker in the country, retail broker, all lines, you know, P&C, benefits, life and health. I've worked with IMA for the last 10 years in my prior role. So I led an organization called TechAssure, which is it's a retail broker network, global broker network that focuses on all things technology risk. So we'll back up just a second and say, when I got into insurance, I loved insurance because it was problem solving. It's very much like software development. It's, you know, solving a problem. How do you build a program that's fit for purpose for what this particular risk profile is? I was not very successful with traditional commercial businesses, you know, construction, real estate, manufacturing. Like these were industries that I didn't really understand, but I did understand technology. So I was able to come in, and while most brokers didn't understand how email worked, I was able to come in and really understand at code level what the SaaS company was doing, how it worked, and how to build an insurance program that dealt with those particular risks. So we joined TechAssure about 10 years ago in my former retail role. IMA is a TechAssure member. I came over last year to help with our innovation initiative, which is called IMA Labs, as well as help with what we call Advanced Industries, which is our focus in ensuring technology, life science, advanced manufacturing, and digital assets.
So is TechAssure like a consortium of brokers?
Exactly. Yeah.
They co-invest in technology? How does that work?
So think of it as a nonprofit trade association of retail brokers all around the world that specialize in tech risk.
Ah, got it.
And it's a very unique specialty. You know, you're talking about non-standardized products. You're talking about every technology works a little bit differently. Unlike other industries, you know, a $50 million software developer, compare it with a peer and they're doing vastly different things. So the insurance that they need is quite different. TechAssure members come together, share information, talk about best practices. What works in London will work in Boston, in San Francisco, in Denver, Colorado, and everywhere else around the world. So that's really the idea, just information share for brokers that truly specialize in that space.
And you're the CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. So not initially. I came in as a member. Unfortunately, the CEO got sick and passed away, left the association in a little bit of a tailspin, not knowing, you know, certainly hadn't done contingency planning for that sort of thing. I was at the point in my former role where I either needed to be running the show or I needed to leave because it's just a kind of a different cultural environment. And so I made the decision, I'll come over, lead TechAssure for probably 2 to 3 years. And I don't know what I'll do. I'll go start my own insurtech. I'll go start my own brokerage. And I was there for almost 8 years, you know, loved it.
Yeah. And, you know, the tech market has gone bananas. Cyber premiums tripled roughly this year.
Yeah. And limits cut in half.
Yeah. Limits got cut. Premiums tripled. It's a pretty wild market right now.
Yeah. You think of it like cyber had it really good for about, you know, 12, 15 years. And we kept telling every commercial policyholder, you need to buy cyber insurance. It's dirt cheap for the amount of coverage you're getting. The exposure is real. And for a long time, it was a hard sell. And we had like a sweet spot of about 2 years where people were buying cyber and the pricing was still low. And carriers were moving towards that. All you need is a website, just a URL, and we can underwrite the account and give you $10 million of limit, and it'll be $2,000 a year. You know, just really ridiculous pricing models. And that's because it's a juvenile market, right? It's we don't have the actuarial data like we do for property or workers' comp. So the models weren't right. And now they've been tested thanks to ransomware, social engineering. And that's just what happens. Like we're starting to have a correction that was very needed. It's unfortunate. It's very painful for some companies that are not able to get the limits that they're contractually obligated to have or the types of coverage that they actually need. But it's okay. I'm not one of those people that says cyber insurance market is destined for failure. It's, you know, on life support. I think it just needed a correction.
Yeah, just too bad the correction had to be all at once in one renewal.
Yeah.
That's the problem and the pain. So what do you do now leading innovation and strategy in IMA Financial? What does a week in the life look like for you? Just daily work leading innovation? Because that's when you say you're director of innovation, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And it's a very nebulous title,
yeah,
right?
Thankfully so. Yeah.
What are the daily habits of innovation look like for you?
Well, so I have a bifurcated role. I help with our production efforts for companies that have unique, complex technology risk, just because that's what I've done for, you know, 15 years is work with very complex technology accounts. So I'm able to lend that IP to our sales and service teams to help them better articulate a value proposition. So I might be spending a lot of time directly speaking with clients doing consulting or prospective clients talking about the value proposition of working with a specialist. So that's half of my role. The other half is working with IMA Labs, and that's all things insurtech, all things innovation and investment. So what's unique about IMA and what I gravitated towards was IMA is not only investing in insurtech, right? We're not deploying software and saying we're a technology-enabled agency. We do that too, but we're also looking for areas where there might be a solution that doesn't exist. And if there's not, then we'll innovate it ourselves. We've done that. There's a company called Highwing that came out of IMA Labs. It's now a standalone company, insurtech solution that was just not available. And we were able to put a team together, develop that product. And then there's also an investment component. So we have our own venture arm that's doing strategic investments. So it's, it could be all over the map what I do on a weekly basis.
Do you steer that investment fund?
We have a separate individual who steers the investment fund, but I'm on the team. So I think of myself sort of as an early stage talent scout for insurtech. So if I'm constantly scanning the environment for what's out there, what solutions are available, who's building what, and for the solutions that I feel like might play a role within IMA, I'll introduce them to the team that I think they could most impact. Or if I say, you know, maybe this isn't necessarily a software that we would use, but I see the value in it and I think it's going to be an A player, then we'll talk about maybe a strategic investment. We have a pretty tight investment thesis, which is it really has to improve the life of our associates or our clients. I mean, that's the insurtech that we're focused on. You know, the carrier insurtech is very critical. I'd say that's the piece that needs the most work. That's not what we're investing in. We're really focused on driving the value for our clients and our associates to make the process easier, better enable them to make smarter decisions.
So there's a lot of insurance companies that I work with and others that I know that do not have a innovation and innovation strategy role. They don't have it. They have a CIO. So for those companies that are out there, and there's many that listen to this, help them understand the difference between having an IT group and having an innovation group.
Yeah, I mean, both are critically important, right? I mean, you've got to have an IT group that's overseeing the core operational tech stack for the organization to keep everything moving. The innovation role is really thinking, you know, more strategically about future state. What does the vision look like 5 years down the road? And how do we put the pieces together for that? And where do we think the industry is going? How do we build solutions for that are going to play nice with not technology of today, but technology of 5 years, 10 years away? So that's where a lot of our work comes with, you know, Web3 Labs. That's something that I have a key role in. And we're really looking at Web3, blockchain, metaverse as that's the future internet. So if we don't have our hands dirty in helping build and shape products and platforms that play in that environment, then we're not going to be relevant in 10 years because that's where the entire world's going to be.
You think so?
I do.
You think we're actually going to move to wearing headsets?
Yeah, I do. Not Oculus full, you know, heavy headsets that are have to be plugged into your computer and all that. But if you've looked at any of the patents that have been filed by Microsoft and Apple and others, the slim profile glasses that you and I are both wearing eventually are going to have the metaverse baked into them, right? So it's more augmented reality than virtual reality that I think we're all going to be living in. And you look, Dubai had a big announcement today. They're doing a tens of millions of dollar investment to become the first city in the world that's fully metaverse optimized. And that doesn't mean you're going to slip on a headset and go tour Dubai and look around like we can do today with art museums and things like that. It means you can actually go to Dubai and the entire city is augmented so that you know your way around without ever having stepped foot in the city. You know, the restaurants that you want to go to, the directions to meetings. It's, you know, that kind of technology, it exists today, just not at scale. And the amount of money that's flowing into it, I think there's no question that's the future.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like a old curmudgeon sometimes that I've been wearing and using VR headsets since I was in high school.
Yep.
We had a really crude headset. I used to play like Frankenstein 3D and like or whatever it was. I forgot what it was. Wolfenstein
3D. Yeah.
I used to play Wolfenstein 3D in a VR headset in like 1996. And it sucked and you wanted to puke because it was the frame rate was too low. And I had the very first Oculus DK1, DK2. I went to the very first Oculus Kinect conference, OC1, where Palmer Luckey turned 21 and ate a chocolate VR headset and then stripped down into his boxers and jumped into a pool in LA. It was a very LA moment. And so I've been there. Like I've been there for the moments. I was there when HoloLens got released. I had the very first HoloLens, the second HoloLens. Got to spend time with Alex Kipman when he was talking about releasing the HoloLens. Like, we wrote apps for HoloLens. I've wrote apps for the Epson Movirio BT200, BT300. I mean,
okay.
I've been all up in this sector.
And you're not feeling it.
And I kind of feel like I'm in the trough of disillusionment, you know? Like, we went through the big hype cycle. And, like, I've got the Quest and the Quest 2, and I've got the HoloLens and HoloLens 2, and I have these devices. I built software for all of them. And it's really interesting. But at the end of the day, my primary device, and this is the guy who actually owns all of these devices and has used all of them, it's still my phone.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I am obsessed with augmented reality. I built an AR platform 8 years ago and loved it. I was fascinated by it. I feel like we're trying to actually sort out the stuff that people want to wear something for, you know? And the phone has gotten so good, and you know, LiDAR on these devices, total game changer for augmented reality.
Yeah.
Total.
Yep. But I'll tell you what your phone can't do is train a surgeon how to operate on a patient.
No, it can't.
By providing them direction. You know, I mean, I suppose it could, but I want both of my surgeon's hands on the instruments, not on their phone, right?
No, and the HoloLens 2, like Trimble, because yep. I operate heavily in the construction space. Trimble did a construction version of the HoloLens 2 called the XR10. They rebalanced the weight of the battery and the device, and they mounted it to a hard hat. And then they wrote a bunch of software to go on it to sync 3D models. And it's working, and they're using it, and it's hands-free, and it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome. I mean,
sounds amazing.
It is amazing. I've used it. It's awesome. Yeah. Like I've been on a job site with this thing and it kicks butt. I'm like,
you're coming back around. I can feel it. You're going to be all in.
You know, honestly, for me, it's going to hit when I can wear this, these glasses in it. And Web3 is interesting. And I want to bookmark Web3 and come back to it because I think we can talk a little more about that. I'm going to ask you a very philosophical question.
Mm.
What is InsurTech?
Yeah. I know what it's not. It's not just a technology platform that the insurance industry uses.
There you go.
There's a lot of legacy players that suddenly have called themselves InsurTech, right?
Yes, they have. And, almost all of them.
Oh, yes. Right. And like we're OG InsurTech. We were InsurTech before there was InsurTech. If that were true, InsurTech wouldn't have existed. Right, because the need for InsurTech is because our industry is so broken from a technology standpoint. I mean, you can appreciate this. When I first got in to the industry, I was like, all right, these certificates of insurance are pretty important. How do we get these to clients to prove that they have this thing that they bought? They go, well, you pick up the phone and you call this lady named Sherry, and she will mail you one. And I was like, well, there's a software solution that can easily do this. Like, why has no one thought of this?
Yep.
And so we're so far behind. And I think once people realize how broken and fragmented it was, you had all of this VC money pouring in to develop innovation. And that's what InsurTech is. It's trying to build the framework of tomorrow's insurance industry, not the legacy framework. As you know, someone that works with carriers' platforms, brokers' platforms, it's outdated technology. It's technology from the 90s. It literally can't be updated. It has to be burnt to the ground and rebuilt. So that's what I think InsurTech is.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I like defining InsurTech in a negative sense by what it's not. So you can also define it by saying radically enhanced customer experience,
mm-hmm.
a dramatic streamlining of undergrading. I try to explain to people like this too. There, to me, there's going paperless and there's going digital. And those are two different things. So going paperless means I'm going to take the same arduous underwriting process and I'm going to eliminate the paper in exchange for zeros and ones.
Yep.
Okay. Bits and bytes. But I'm going to keep an identical underwriting process. I'm just going to process it with, in many cases, spreadsheets, because you and I both know there's entire carriers that run on Excel and Word only. You can literally underwrite policies, issue policies, and manage claims only using Excel and Word. And there are many that do to a scary level.
Yeah. Right. MGAs too.
Oh yeah. Oh, especially MGA. Yeah. Yeah. They want more commission, but they don't want to buy the systems to actually do it. So they,
you got it.
They want the 30%, baby.
It's a good gig.
They're tired of 15. they want 30, and then they go hire a TPA and pay them 8 and they keep the 7%. And then, I mean, come on. I mean, it's, then you have digital MGAs who call themselves insurtechs. And then you say, okay, well, how are you an insurtech? Like, by what definition are you an insurtech? Well, we have an easy to use website. Is that being an insurtech? I mean, I have to say no. We've been building easy to use websites in insurance for decades, literally decades, right? Like, some people had really crappy websites and some people had really good ones. That was just the way it was, right? Some systems were easy to use and some weren't. But I think dramatically streamlining the user experience is big. Going digital rather than going paperless. So re-engineering the entire process so that underwriting, and to me, like, the biggest thing, you're at a broker, right? So the damn forms. Oh my gosh. If you're still having people fill out forms, you're not an insurtech.
Yeah.
Like PDF forms. I had to fill one out last week for a line of business I'm renewing. PDF forms.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're in 2022 and I'm still filling out PDF forms. You can't just take last year's data and then ask me to update it inside of a web system that you can then submit to all of your, no, oh no, 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 no.
Yeah.
So that to me is that's got to go at some point. It's got to be easier to buy insurance, in particular for businesses, personal lines, right? Buying home insurance, renter's insurance, lower face value, life insurance. That's pretty easy now.
It's very easy. I mean, I think outside of high net worth homeowners, personal lines is going to be 100% digital. And everyone's comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Digital.
Digital, not truly paperless. Digital, like truly digital. And that's the other thing for me, Garrett. Insurtechs leverage big data and traditional insurance technology
because they can't.
Because they can't. Like, when you enter an address, I'm going to pull all the data on your property for you so I don't have to ask you about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a big one.
Yeah. It's all client experience based. I mean, you hit on the one that's, I think, the poster child of application management, right? The digitization of applications. We won a very large account very recently solely because their experience with their current broker was so bad because they didn't have time to look at 12 PDFs and compare last year's to this year's, whereas our system is smart enough to send them a smart link and just update the information and it automatically goes out to market. You know, it's the way it should have been built from the beginning. And so that's where the brokers specifically that aren't investing in that kind of client experience are going to start losing market share to those that are. I've been saying that for 5 years. I think now we're starting to see that where clients just expect more. And then once they're in that ecosystem, can you imagine going back to, like, what's the renewal process look like? Well, you know, we'll send you summary of insurance and you go over that and mark it up and send it back. Those days are over.
I hope they're over. With y'all, they are.
Yeah.
Right. You've moved on from it. I would say if you had to, like, break it down into words, it would be integration is a really, really important hallmark, right? Like, integrated systems. And this is something we suck at insurance. There is no real data standard for passing. I mean, there is a data standard. Okay, hold on. There is a data standard that not nearly enough people use.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Like, and
well, again, you're talking about
for policy and claims.
There's certain aspects of what we do that can easily be standardized. Then there's other things that can't be, and we've made our own mess here. Take cyber, we were talking about, right? There could be 7 insuring agreements. There could be 17 insuring agreements. You know, cyber crime might be defined 5 different ways within each of those policies. Like, it's very difficult to teach a system how 500 different markets define certain terms, right? So, like, there's not a standard set of framework that everyone operates from. And that's the problem. You have to build your own data lake and teach that how to interpret all this other third-party data, and it's time-consuming and it's expensive.
Yeah, it's interesting. So integration is a big hallmark, right, for me. It's easier to integrate if you use standard data sets. I listen to a lot of insurance podcasts and insurtech podcasts, and no one has ever talked about OMG's Standards Development Organization PNC data model. And literally, like any podcast I've ever listened to, and maybe I've just missed an episode, but there is a PNC data model for property and casualty insurance. It actually exists. It was published in 2014, and it was signed off on by 21st Century, ACE, CSC, CTS, Cindy Mike, Gail Austin, Garza Data, Harleysville, International, IBM, Liquid Hub, Mark B. Gorman, Object Management Group, Penn National Insurance, and TCS. They were the contributing members. And it defines just about in this specification, which is a pretty sizable document, it defines almost every data field that you would need for policy and claims. It's amazing.
And I had no idea it existed.
And me neither. Until recently. I, by the way, I just texted you the link to it in the
chat. Awesome, thanks.
So yeah. You can see it. Because I never knew about this. And I have been doing this for 17 years. 21 years in business, 17 years in insurance. And there is an actual data model that was agreed upon by a whole group of companies that defines all the things we need. Because this is a hallmark of insurtech is integration. And if we use standard data models, then we can integrate more easily.
Yeah.
Right? Another one for me is intelligence, the use of machine learning in some way, shape, or form.
I agree. I think we're really early days on that. You know, there have been a few companies that have dipped their toe into that water thinking, you know, our AI platform is very smart, and there have been quite a few failures. So I agree. AI is absolutely the future. It's just I'm not sure we're there to where it's able to be rolled out at scale. It can do certain things, right? But it's not an enterprise solution yet.
Not in some regards, it's being useful. There's some interesting players that are doing things with reserve setting that I'm really interested in, where they're looking at historical claim data and they're making recommendations on reserves and they're making recommendations on treatments in work comp claims. And they're saying it based on the entire data set, our machine learning algorithm has run on this data set and we're recommending that you get nurse case management on these three claims.
Yeah.
Because, it's like a super specific use, right?
That's what I mean. So we're using it with benchmarking data, right? Because same sort of thing. Well, based on the industry, the NAICS code or SIC code, the revenue size of the client, what we know about them. These are the estimated maximum probable losses per line. These are the carriers that you should look to the market. Like that's where it can do a good job with the right data set. You know, you got to have clean data.
With clean data, which goes back to standards. So integration, intelligence, automation is another hallmark for me. And I think that's something that we've gotten better at is actually automating workflows. Have you done any experimentation or work with RPA, robotic process automation?
Very little that I'm involved in, no.
Software robots. Yeah. It's been an interesting bridge technology for me where it's not the end state, like it shouldn't be the end state to train a robot how to use a human user interface. Because ideally you just have an API to work with.
Yeah.
But in the absence, like we have a huge absence of APIs, right? To integrate with our systems. And so at the end of the day, sometimes you got to work around the API by using something like UiPath. And so I see that as a big hallmark as well. But then of course the use of BI and the use of business intelligence systems. And it's been interesting watching the world evolve from Crystal reports to Power BI and beyond. But I think that's a major hallmark. So I always like talking about what is insurtech, because I feel like we throw the phrase around and now I feel like the legacy players have misappropriated the phrase to make sure they don't feel left out. And we're kind of losing track of the definition of what it actually means, you know?
And I'll go back to my point to say, if there wouldn't be a need for all of these companies to exist if the legacy players had built it correctly from the beginning. So,
yeah, boom. And of course, the world evolves too, right?
100%.
Like the data sets we have available. The first company I worked with insurance was a roof inspection company for property. They did inspections. That's all they did, underwriting inspections. And we were like, you know, drones, these things called drones are coming out. They might really impact this. And satellite imagery, like on-demand satellite imagery could really, and sure enough, now you look at what's going on in house inspections and roof inspections, totally different ballgame because technologies exist that didn't exist at the time, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
So they didn't miss in 2001 or 2003. They just didn't have the tech available to them. And Elon wasn't up there with 40,000 satellites either.
This is true.
What do you think is going to be big next? Like, because we're talking about hype cycles, right? Like, what's big for y'all? You're a broker. Tell me what the next big project is for a broker.
So we did digital applications, digital underwriting. I think now servicing on a digital basis, I think certificates or compliance is a big issue for a lot of insureds and not having real genuine oversight in, you know, who their vendors are, who their clients are, and more importantly, what their contracts obligate them to. Like there's a lot of nuance in a commercial insurance portfolio and it bleeds into legal contracts, lease agreements, vendor contracts. So to be able to automate that, to be able to have oversight using a digital platform that's smart enough to identify where you're compliant, where your weak blind areas are, that's, I think, tomorrow. I mean, the technology's here. There's a few players. But I think that's where we're going to be headed, to where we're providing a much more digital solution. And claims is the other, you know, where the claims process is so backwards how we've done it. And I think everything from reporting, I think you can appreciate this just given what your company does. You know, there's just a much better way, because that's what they bought, was the claims experience, right? They bought this paper to perform in their time of need. And 90% of consumers and business owners feel like it was a terrible experience when they actually had a claim. So we've got to figure that out, how to make it faster, less onerous on them, and expedite the entire process from weeks into hours.
Garrett, I just went through a property claim.
Personally?
Because And I had a water damage, ice maker water line.
Ice makers are terrible.
And
I'll do it every time.
Yeah. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Like, it makes me never want to buy an ice maker ever again.
Yeah.
Because the amount of damage it did was pretty incredible. You know, pretty incredible. You know, flooring, ceiling, a few things that it was on the second floor too. So it was a mess. And the claims experience was not good. It was confusing. Super long time to get an answer. I had to call and leave a voicemail. I couldn't text with my claims adjuster. The emails took forever, and I had to constantly remind him of which claim number it was. So I had to always look it up. It was awful. It was like, it was so dumb. And then the payments, they screwed it up and they mailed a payment that was for my construction guy to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what we're talking about. You know, this is terrible.
Right.
It's terrible. I agree with you. It's got to get a lot better. And the brokers have to lead the way too, you know, because they're the ones with the relationship with the client. I think they've got to, we're seeing a lot of brokers go into a claim stewardship role, you know, where they kind of steward the claim along, and they've got to have a better way of keeping data together. You know, a lot of insurtechs, this is my final question for you, Garrett, because you're involved in your investment fund. A lot of insurtechs about 5 years ago were saying, we're going to disintermediate the broker. In fact, pretty much all of them are saying that. We're going to be a digital MGA, then we're going to be a carrier, and we're going to go direct to market, and we're going to cut all the brokers out.
No.
That is not what happened. Like,
no.
Not even close to what happened. So, I mean, there are some direct-to-consumer plays, but the vast majority of these companies are like, oh, no, we have to work with brokers. We can't possibly scale without them.
Yeah. So they've pivoted to, we are going to enable brokers. We're not going to disintermediate them. We are going to enable them.
There you go.
Which I think is better, because it, study after study shows that consumers want a guide, an expert to hold their hand through the process. And going through a website is just not the same thing. So if you're paying attention, all of the insurtechs that were out there saying we're going to be direct to consumer are now partnering with brokers. Even those, you know, five years ago that I told, you know, what's your broker partnership strategy? Oh, we're not partnering with brokers. And then today,
no,
we don't need to do that. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah. You know, pride comes before the fall, as they say, in the South. It's a tough thing, but it is proven that human relationships, I think, still reign supreme.
100%.
You know, you've got people do business with other people. But what we're trying to do now, you know, of course, you're talking to a guy who's spent 21 years in software and 17 of that in insurance. And the whole time I've been providing tooling to the existing players to try and eliminate friction. And so that's really what, you know, my goal has been all along is let's cut all the friction out so that we can have great human relationships and great human interactions, but without the friction of having to fill forms out, remember your claim number, find the right email address, trip through 80 page applications, you know, let's just kill the friction so that you can easily sign up, you can easily pay, and you can easily file a claim and get paid back. Like if we can do those four things, then this is going to be great, because then insurance companies can do what they do great, which is calculate risk and take risk, right? Or in the brokerage business, form great relationships. And what my broker does for me, identify areas that I don't have coverage in that I need help.
That's right. Well, and your broker we know how to navigate the insurance landscape. We know how to navigate carriers,
yeah,
with regards to claims or underwriting or whatever function. That's not on you. Like, you as the insurance buyer shouldn't have to have an insurance license to know, how do I get paid for this claim that I just had? That's what a broker should be doing, managing that. And it's more of a psychological relationship of just being there to help you through the process, to say, you're not crazy. This is not a great process, but we're going to hold your hand and we're going to help this thing happen. We're going to expedite where it can. Yeah, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
There is. You know, I thought, I'm a pilot, so I fly. Love flying. Aviation insurance is super complicated.
And expensive.
Yes, it's very expensive, very complicated, very hard to navigate. And you get a lot of rejections, you know, and I could not do it without, because I tried doing it online direct, and it was a terrible experience. And I got a really good insurance broker who specializes in aviation, and it completely changed everything. Right. There's still a lot of value. So I want to close on that with you. Yeah. Cause I think it's important to remind everybody how much value good brokers add to the buying process and the claims experience. And I'm thrilled that someone like you is leading innovation at a firm like yours.
Cool. Thank you.
So I appreciate what you're doing, and also appreciate your vintage. 1979 was a good year.
Yes, sir.
You know, it was a good year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was a good year for this vintage of wine that we come from. So
that's right. My kids remind me. They remind me that I was born in the 70s all the time.
Yes. Are you enjoying Stranger Things?
Love it. Of course. You know the answer to that.
Yes, of course. I said, kid, this is what childhood was like. No electronics. Playing outside until the street lights came on. No parental supervision. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah. How the world has changed.
Oh, how it has changed. Garrett, I appreciate your time. Thanks for being on the InsureTech Geek podcast and talking tech with us. Really do appreciate it. And thanks to all of you listeners out in listener land for joining us. We'll see you on the next show.
Thanks. Same to you.
This has been the InsureTech Geek podcast, powered by JB Knowledge. That's jbknowledge.com. It's all about transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com, with co-host Rob Galbraith. That's endofinsurance.com. Big thanks to Jim Greenlee, our podcast producer, Kara Dalton-Alro, our creative producer. And thank you for joining us today. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech. So enjoy the ride and geek out. See you next time.